On this episode, I interview one of my favorite women in the staffing industry, Jamie Delsing, who is the managing partner and one of three family business owners at Consultus, a technology staffing firm. Jamie shares her family history in staffing. Her grandfather was one of the first individuals who pioneered the staffing industry and defined what it meant to be a contract worker. If you're interested in the history of staffing and how it compares to the industry today, this one's for you. I hope you enjoy this episode. Hey everyone, today I am here with Jamie Delsing. She is the managing partner and one of three family owners of Consultus, a technology staffing firm. Jamie, thanks for being with me.
Oh, thank you, Emily. I appreciate it very much. Excited.
Yeah, I'm so excited to have you on. And for everybody who is listening, I've gotten to know Jamie through Clear Edge. And when I first met her, she told me all about her family history, which is rooted deep into staffing. So I needed to have her on the podcast and go through her history with everybody. It is fascinating. So Jamie, let it start from the top. Where did staffing in your family begin?
Oh my gosh. My grandfather, as you had mentioned, he started in 1946, a company called Chicago City Car Unloaders, which is now Spherion. We have nothing to do with our organization. It's not affiliated with Spherion, but it was my grandfather was one of the founder of Spherion. But back in 1946, he was working for General Foods, and he noticed that a lot of they were throwing away a lot of food because the rail workers, the labor workers were unloading and they were getting paid hourly. And so a lot of the food was spoiling because the labor workers were, you know, getting paid hourly. So they were moving at a slower pace. And so what he did is he quit. He incorporated literally City Car Unloaders. And he went back to General Foods, General Mills, and he said, look, I will find you labor workers and I will charge you per car that's unloaded instead of hourly. And that's exactly what he did. And they loved the concept. My mom was 13 at the time and she'd tell us stories of how she was in the back of the flatbed truck with my grandfather. They'd be driving around the cities 5 a.m. looking for people, looking for workers. You know, it was the Great Depression era, so there was plenty of unemployment, unfortunately, and they would throw T-shirts on them. They'd have thermoses of coffee they'd be carrying them. They'd take them, and the more money that these guys wanted, the more rail cars they would unload, and that started the whole concept of temporary labor.
That is fascinating. I mean, your grandfather really started temporary contract workers in the staffing industry. Was anybody else doing it at that time?
I know that Kelly Girls, that they were called Kelly Girls at the time, they also started, I think they may have started in 1947, but I know between City Car Unloaders and Kelly, they were pretty much neck and neck as the original starters of our industry.
Wow, that's fascinating. And how did the market reply to this? What was their reaction? I mean, did he grow from the standpoint of contract workers? Did he keep his company pretty small? How did it grow?
Sure. No, he actually grew it tremendously. In 1956, he changed the name from City Car Unloaders to Labor Pool. And then he would eventually he had medical pool, labor pool, industrial pool, and clerical pool. And he grew his businesses across the country by friends and family. He would uncles, aunts, brothers, sisters. In fact, when my mom and dad got married, he said, you guys would be great for our Cleveland office. So off my mom and dad went to run and start the Cleveland office. And they were all license agreements. And so that was his way of expanding. It was something that he really enjoyed and loved because these were, you know, he loved his family and friends. So that was important to him. And he was making them all very successful along with himself. So it was really cool.
Wow. I mean, that just shows how much there was a need for contract workers in the marketplace and in the economy at the time. And I think that is really, you know, relevant to what was going on, you know, where when he started around the Great Depression and just realizing that there was such a need in the marketplace.
Yeah, it was great. It was, he sold the business in 1978. He sold it to the Bloch brothers, who, you know, have done many great things with the organization. But he was done at the time. He was successful enough. I know that a lot of the locations are still around that he started back in the late 70s. They're still around. I know in the 80s, my parents actually started a nursing service, which we called it Houston Nursing Services, or I should say they, I was still a child. And they would go to hospitals, and they would supply hospitals with temporary LNs, LPNs, RNs, you know, whatever nurse, it was not a lot of skilled nurses back then. There's a lot more types of disciplines in the medical world now, but back then it was like three or four different types of nurses and that was it. But that was also a very successful company. And while she and my dad were running this business, one of their employees, a gentleman by the name of Dick, had approached my mom and said, "Look, I think this computer thing, there's something to be said for this. I mean, a lot of people blew off computers. They weren't going to go anywhere." And wow. This gentleman, Dick, was like, no, these are going to stick. He said, "I think that you should start something in this temporary world that we know, with computers." And my mom and dad, unfortunately, at the time got a divorce. And my mom's like, "You know what? I'm going to do it." So this gentleman, Dick, even had the name, and he came up with that name, CompuTemp, at the time. And so it was very successful for us. And then in 1999, we changed the name because we were having a difficult time with the talent. I mean, the Oracle DBA didn't really want to work for a company or be called a temp. They wanted to be called a contractor or a consultant. And that was kind of in the late 90s, mid 90s, that's kind of when that wave changed, and temp was more not a suitable word for the high-end disciplines, if you will. So that's why we changed our name to consultants.
Okay, for temp to contract.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yep. So when did you come into play in the staffing industry?
Well, I came into play when my husband and I moved to Los Angeles in 1989, and my mom was ready to start expanding, and I needed a job. And so she's like, "How about we open an office in Los Angeles?" And I was like, "That's perfect. I'm in. I'll do it." I knew nothing about the business other than just osmosis and what was running in my blood. But I thought, you know, I could do this. And I hired a couple of recruiters, and I was the salesperson. And, I mean, back then, there was a phone, you know, and literally a Rolodex, and my CRM was a black binder, and their tabs were dates. You know, Monday I knew I had to call these people. Tuesday I knew I had to call these people. Wednesday and so on and so on. And the recruiters just had, you know, little three-part NCR cards that they would interview somebody for, either a shift supervisor, a printer operator, plotter operator. There was not a lot of technical disciplines. We were basically running the large IBM mainframe environments, or the deck vax environments were more of the scientific, more of the hospitals have the deck vax systems. And we would do, you know, we had 180, 86 DOS green screen in our office, and we would put payroll on a floppy. We would FedEx it back to corporate, and corporate would print all the checks and invoices and aging reports and, you know, those types of documents that we needed. They FedEx it back, and you know, it was just, you know, the technology's obviously changed, but that was my world. You know, my world was more educating my hiring managers about that there really was a service that offered what we were offering. And now, you know, it's a little bit different, but back then it was a little bit of an easier sell because nobody else did what we did. Brandon Systems, I remember General Employment and Brandon Systems were the only two out there that did technical. And General Employment didn't do a whole lot of it. They were just dabbling. They're more of an executive search firm. But Brandon Systems, he was our number one competitor.
Wow. Wow, that is so interesting. I mean, you have been in the staffing industry for a while now, and you've seen how it has changed. What would you say is the most interesting change that you've witnessed?
Interesting, obviously the job boards and LinkedIn and, those have all changed. That's made it, a little bit easier, a lot easier to do our jobs. It's made us more efficient and more effective. But what I've seen the biggest change, I would say, it's mostly, the whole commoditization of our industry. Look, I know every industry eventually commoditizes, no matter what it is. But I think what's it's just really melted down almost a little bit, where, these VMS companies, look, I'm all for, entrepreneurship and running a business to make money, but some of them have come in and really, undermined the quality of the talent that companies are hiring. Yes, they've reduced costs and they've brought prices down, but at what expense is my question? And so I think our sustainable our business model has kept us going. I think it's just based on relationships, is that we do business with companies that we can do that we can actually have we talk to and we communicate with directly a hiring manager that's running his IT environment, no matter what environment it is. We don't deal much with HR. We don't have a lot of VMS accounts unless we can talk to a hiring manager. So we're not on the list. We don't deal with purchasing. It's just not our business model. So that's helped us sustain our business, but it's difficult sometimes. As I said earlier, it was easier for me to sell in Los Angeles because I was educating the client on what our businesses are. That's what we did. They'd never heard of our company before, or type of company like us before. Well, now my sales team and my business development people are spending time educating these clients now on why cost, what's more cost effective for you? What's going to fix your pain? What's your ROI in the long run? So it's a whole different type of mentality, in our industry.
Interesting, selling the talent more so.
Yeah.
So, what are you looking forward to in the staffing industry's future from, what you've seen in the past? What are you looking forward to as we move forward?
Well, I think I'm really excited about artificial intelligence. I think that's going to be a real cool concept and cool technology that's going to really help take us to the next level. It's interesting because, again, the last 10 years we've been really focused on, technology in the staffing business. We have our applicant tracking systems. Those are important, and our CRMs, and we have a whole effective way of searching, and there's Boolean searching, and there's job boards and LinkedIn, and I think that, the next level is going to just be beyond that. I mean, I think artificial intelligence, it's like machine learning. That's like Boolean on steroids. They're going to think for you. You don't even have to think out that Boolean string. The artificial intelligence, machine will think that for you.
Right. So an example of artificial intelligence is this, where basically like personality tests where a candidate can test their skills and the software will say this candidate would be great for this type of position because of their skills in XYZ.
That's exactly right. I mean, another example is, Watson is a learning machine.
Right.
Alexa is a learning machine. Those are artificial intelligent devices, and it's really helpful. I mean, everybody has an Alexa now. You just start talking to it, and it tells you exactly what you want to hear.
Right.
It's cool.
And what
Yeah.
about how do you plan on balancing artificial intelligence with the aspect of human relationships?
Well, that's a good question, Em, because I feel like you can't ever do away with the soft skill or the culture fit in our business. I mean, you can be more efficient in giving you your top five candidates, but those top five candidates still have to be fleshed out by a human being. They have to be able to fit a culture of an organization. That relationship that we have that I was boasting on earlier is important. That I need to be able to understand, and my recruiting support team need to understand the culture fit for my clients. Because if they don't understand that, I'm not doing them any good, and they're not going to, they would rather go back to the commoditized world if I can't help them find somebody that's above and beyond just a resume, you know, buzzword match. So the artificial intelligence takes it to a level like we've never seen it before, but that human factor and that culture fit factor won't ever go away.
Right. Yeah, it's all about, you know, balancing the technology with the human touch in staffing industry. I think that when you strike that balance perfectly, you know, that's where the magic happens. That's where you're placing candidates that are with their the prospective employer, even sometimes beyond the project that you've placed them for.
I think
that that's really, really important. And I know that you are also involved with children in STEM programs. So do you mind sharing a little bit about that and what that means with the future for the staffing industry?
Sure. I'd love to. Not only children, but females, you know, women in the industry, it's tough to be in this business. I mean, one of the things that I've noticed is there are a lot of educational institutions, universities and colleges that are actually doing away with their computer science and their MIS departments because kids are not, you know, getting degrees from institutions anymore. One, it's just not popular. There's the STEM programs are not educating the marketplace enough. And two, a lot of the technology talent that we hire and place out on their careers and their jobs, a lot of them don't go to college because they're such quick thinkers and they're so analytical that they pick up on stuff and they're, the best way for them to get an education, if you will, is on the job. So it's those two factors are really preventing degrees in our world. But it's really important. And people, the supply is really tough right now. There's definitely a shortage, a big shortage of IT people. And I know that's why we go offshore and we find people offshore, but that's a whole different conversation. But I find that I really make an effort to get involved in WITI and IT Women and Girls Who Code and those types of organizations and those groups. They help promote in your local community, they help promote STEM programs. And I think that's really important, especially girls, because they're just not getting into the math and the science programs.
Right. Yeah, it's really important. And I think that, you know, the organizations that you listed, they do an excellent job at engaging with young girls and encouraging them to dive into STEM programs, because you never know what will stick with you or what you're really great at or what you'll find interesting. So I think that those programs are so important.
Oh yeah. I mean, that's our future. I mean, it sounds so cliche, but they are our future. And if this business, I mean, look, it's good for me that there's a tough supply because then I'm more in demand from the businesses that are out there, but it's a disservice to our industry if there's not enough people out there that are doing, you know, that are not enough technical talent.
Definitely. Well, luckily, I think that those types of programs and the interest from young women is growing for sure. So I think that our future is bright. So I'm excited about that.
Me too.
Jamie, thank you so much for coming on today onto the Edge podcast. I really appreciate having you. And if anybody has any questions for you or would like to follow up, where can they find you? What's your email?
My email is jamied@consultus.com, or they can just follow me on Twitter at @consultusIT.
Wonderful.
Or LinkedIn. Happy to connect on LinkedIn.
Yes,
thank you very much for your time today, Em.
Thank you, Jamie. I appreciate it so much, and I will talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon now.
Thanks. Thanks for listening to this week's The Edge episode. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and subscribe to the podcast in iTunes. And you can also email me at etatum@clearedgemarketing.com. And let me know if you have any questions or if you want to hear about anything in particular as it relates to our Women in Staffing series or our marketing episodes. So just shoot me an email and I look forward to connecting with you. Thank you.